Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie at JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo, if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to DorkForest.Bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording, and then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there, and other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD, and you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my garage doing the Dork Forest with longtime friend, first time on the pod. I don't even understand how 16 years later that you haven't been on this podcast, Victor Varnado. Welcome to the program.
I'm so happy to be here. Finally.
You feel welcome. Do you feel welcome?
I've been campaigning.
Yes.
And finally, I'm on.
Exactly. All it took was you going, yes. And because I just tend to say, hey, do you want a podcast? And then people do. So for the most part, people do. We've known each other since Minneapolis days.
Yeah, way back in the beginnings of the dawn of comedy, I like to call it.
The 12th century. That's right. The early 90s.
We know each other back from Minneapolis, back where they had Acme Comedy Club.
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
That would have been 92.
Yeah, you're ahead of me in the comedy world.
Oh yeah,
but
I think you're like a generation under me. You're, and then two generations under me are people that are more successful than me. Well,
yeah,
you're more
always
successful than me. Always, always. That's the way it goes. It's nothing to be done. So you live in New York City. You are many things. You are a podcaster. You have, I just did it. It's Six Unseemly Questions, and the Twitter feed on that is at Six Unseemly, S-I-X, Unseemly.
Unseemly.
Spelled. As it is spelled. But it's called Six Unseemly Questions. They didn't feel unseemly. They felt perfectly normal, kind of nice questions.
I think that some of the questions are unseemly. Like people who see the podcast and see the questions always are like, ooh, I'd hate to be asked those questions. Like if people fantasize that it's worse than it is when people come on the podcast. The questions are most, it really should be six dumb questions, really, is
six.
What the podcast is.
Kind of interesting, but random questions. You could call it that, but it is a little long for Apple. So, but it's you and a team. It's not just one-on-one.
I have a sidekick. My co-host is basically, it's my friend Dave Rosinski. He's a comedian. He's super, super funny, incredibly unorganized, and you can't count on him to do anything.
Oh, so hence, I said, he is just a co-host.
Yeah. So I said, I will do this podcast and I'll take care of everything. All you have to do is show up and be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the podcast, I just basically started off with him saying, I don't expect you to do anything. And he's lived up to that.
Early days of the Dork Forest when Joe Wilson was my co-host for 3 years. He did it.
Yeah.
And he did so much work. And eventually he was like, you know, I'm going to going to work on my own thing. This is more your thing. And I was like, fair enough, man. And then he goes, and then I'm like, holy shit, he did a lot of work. Yeah, he did a lot. He did almost all of the sort of making sure the tech worked and it was a lot of plugging. So I miss him dearly. He didn't die or anything. We're still friends, but I don't get to see him because he's up in northern New York now. It's New York State. So
you're kind of like cradled into the podcast world and then suddenly you had to fend for yourself.
Exactly. He taught me how to swim and then let me go. I fear the day when Patrick Brady goes, you know, I'm 30 now. Am I still doing your tech? What's happening? And because he came in early days too. And because he didn't like how it sounded when I went from the first 200 episodes were sort of conference call.
Right.
And then I went to pre-recorded and the pre-recorded audio was so mediocre to terrible, better than the conference call. But Patrick Brady said, oh my gosh, can I fix that? I listened to the show. And so for years, he fixed it, and I couldn't pay him. And now I have donations, and I sell more merch, and so I can pay him. But he has a real job, regular job. So I don't understand. Is your dorkdom Patrick Brady in the Dork Forest, Victor Renato? Because we're 6 minutes in.
That's not my dorkdom at all.
At all.
I don't even know who Patrick Brady is.
He's my audio guy, and he's great.
Way to go, Patrick. I know you're listening to this right now, and you'll probably hate this.
Don't be weird. Don't make weird audio hardness for him. Don't make things difficult. So I will say this, is that your dorkdom is, I mean, I knew this about you, is that you are a diamond of nerddom, of dorkdoms, right? Like, you're many faceted. And
that's true. I am many faceted.
But your through line is that you're like, I'm obsessed with this. I'm going to learn how to do it.
Yeah. Is my dorkdom autodidactic? Is that an accurate description?
That term is pretty dorky. Let's go with that. Autodidactic. Yes.
Yeah. Just because I just love to make everything that I see. So like, I play video games, I love to make video games. Yeah. I see a comic book, I want to make a comic book. I watch a movie, I make a movie. That's the way I've always been with everything. And I learn how to, and I don't just screw around. I do them like, you know, I've written for Marvel because I like comic books. I've written for Marvel. I saw stand up. I've been on Conan. I like movies. I directed for Warner Brothers, you know, so like I really try to do things for real if I can.
Right. But the thing is that's not the point, right? I mean, the point is not to be on Conan. It's not to write for Marvel.
Not
it's
at all.
Literally it's to create. It's to the do the thing. And like, I've never written for Marvel. But I have contacted that guy, Will Moss, a couple of times. The editor, he was very polite. Anyway, so I would
turn down.
Well, he didn't. He told me he would read the pitch, and then he hasn't read the pitch. And I ping him every 3 to 6 months to go, did you read that pitch? You'd love that pitch. And because I wrote the first 7 pages of the comic with stuff. But I mean, I think that it's important, you know, just for everybody to know that if they want to do, because I think it's something everybody does to various degrees of success, right? You're like, I want to learn how to skateboard, so I'm going to buy a skateboard, and then I'm going to fall and break my wrist, so I'm probably not going to be Olympic.
But I always want to prove to myself that I'm good enough, and I think that's what the accomplishments are about, because like, I feel like...
Oh, this is a therapy moment. You're always good enough, Victor. Victor, you're good enough even if you don't get published.
I mean, that's what you say, but there's a voice inside my head.
Oh my God, that says, hole will totally never be filled, my friend. My friend, you are fine. You're doing great. Like, the one that struck out at me was electronics. You're like, I want to build electronics.
Yeah,
what the hell?
I like to... Yeah, it's because
I don't even know how electronics work.
I got interested in some robotics I was interested in. And then I started learning how to put together motors and engines and gears and to make things. And so I made a remote control follow focus for a camera out of just like garbage.
Well, okay, so you got interested in robotics, like sort of robotics in the way of what, like walking robots or drones or what?
Oh, yeah.
What is the definition of robotics? The children I know are taking robotics classes. What are they learning?
Robotics are pretty simple. I mean, they can be pretty simple. Some robotics are just a simple arm that picks up something and moves something. And some robots have like AI built into them that they actually make decisions. And then sometimes they're just like responding to programming, or sometimes that programming isn't even like code. Sometimes the code is just a series of predetermined gears that kind of work just like an old punch. Do you remember like punch cards when computers first came out and they had punch cards? So sometimes that's how the robot gets information. And there's a lot of different ways to get information to a robot. So it is like a wide range of what robotics is. I'm not an expert on robotics at
You don't have to be an expert on anything. You have to know in your heart that I know even less than you.
but I mean, there's like a lot of different ways. Like, I remember like even in high school when we started working with like the Logo programming system, which was a system where you would program like a little robot to learn how to like walk around a room, where it was all based on distance, and the robot really didn't have any sensory input. But nowadays,
Roomba's a robot.
A Roomba is a robot. It has sensory input.
Okay.
Like a Roomba sees and decides, oh, I'm not gonna smack into the wall forever. Or I'm gonna go around this thing. I guess it depends on which Roomba you have, because some of them. Some of them used to just like bang up against things, and that's how they figured out, you know, how a room was shaped.
Don't go that way.
Yeah.
So it would be,
they would just bang up against things and turn around. But then I know that some of the more modern ones actually have like, they can see things and go around things. And so that's like,
that's good. Yeah.
And then you can get a robot that already can recognize things. So you don't have to teach your robot how to recognize things. You can just tell a robot when you see a door, or when you see a cup, this is what you should do. So you don't even have to do the part where you have to teach the robot how to see things anymore, because now you can buy a full robot. Like Boston Dynamics, you can buy one of their robots and it already can distinguish between objects and walk around things and balance. So you don't have to teach a robot how to do any of that stuff. All you have to do is say, walk here, do that. Now it's like, it's a whole different world now, robot wise.
Well, yeah. I mean, the robots I see on YouTube are fancy. Like they can do somersaults and they can, you know, and, you know, eventually everyone talks, all the comics are like, sex robots are coming. And I'm like, I think already exist. Someone is already fucking a robot, my friends.
Sex robots have been around for quite a while. And there's a whole documentary on sex robots. I think it's called Real Girls.
Okay.
Well, those weren't all robots. Some of them were just dolls.
Right. Some of them are just sex dolls, which are sort of robotic, but also just, or they just lie there because they're just, it's essentially you've bought a pillow to fuck or a balloon to fuck, right?
Exactly. Except it's weighted like a human.
Hey, spoiler alert, Rangers of the Dork Forest. I'm going to swear a lot in this portion. So I don't know what to normally say. I usually don't swear quite this much, but it's all adults. It's fine. It's not listed as for children, this podcast, on any platform. So whatever.
That's okay. I'm going to swear too. Is that cool?
Please do. So you saw robots, or you were interested in robots, and then you're like, I want to figure out how to make engines?
Well, I mean, robots, I mean, you can buy a whole robot nowadays, or you can build a robot. You can get, in fact, when Radio Shacks were open, you could just go in. There are actually, in Radio Shack, they usually have all these, in the back, they have like all these drawers with like transistors and stuff like that. You can just buy pieces of whatever you want. You can buy switches, you can buy motors, you can buy, I'm trying to think about what the other piece is called, the one that, because there's some switches that are only turned on by how much power you send through them. So okay. sometimes you can actually flip a switch or a button, but then sometimes they are activated by how much power you decide to send through them. And I forget what those switches are called.
Okay.
But yeah, so you can build a robot from scratch if you wanted to.
Right, right.
And then you could, nowadays, you can put in a Raspberry brain inside anything and then program it any way you want to. And then just, you can make pretty much whatever you can think about.
What is a Raspberry brain? Let's go there. That was my first question as you said it. And I was like, what is that?
Raspberry Pi. Are these computers that were made that were like so cheap to make that people in they were easy to supply to people in third world countries or kids in third world countries who need to learn in school who can't afford a Mac. People made these Raspberry Pi computers.
Okay.
But another use for these computers is anything because they're like super simple computers that are super cheap. And then you can basically just take them and make them the brain of any sort of object that you, anything that you want to use. In fact, some people link together several Raspberry Pis if they want like a big brain on something.
Okay.
And so like, they're just like these super cheap computers.
Okay. I am.
And they're modular.
Oh, okay. And they're easy to open up and adapt or.
Yes.
Like you can get into the hardware of them, but they're also Absolutely. Super resilient kind of thing. Because the one that I remember, there was one where you could give somebody $100 or $200 and they could send like one or two like super thick computers to the middle of, you know, and they were solar they would recharge on solar. So they weren't called Raspberries.
They could have had a Raspberry Pi brain because a lot of times they can do that and they could put the batteries for their power supply and then the solar power to fuel those batteries. Yeah, that could be a Raspberry Pi brain. In fact, you've probably messed around with a Raspberry Pi because I know you like video games and yeah. a lot of the emulators that people have now that are like physical emulators that can emulate all kinds of stuff are usually run by Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a good, so I know that, I'm going to jump all over the place. You may drive this train and take it away from me at any time, but now I kind of want to talk about video games.
I love video games.
Right. Cause you play video games and then you wanted to make video games. And we were talking very basically about, an old sort of, a plan to make us a Dork Forest video game. So,
yes.
But the video
By
games
the way,
you've made, yeah?
Sorry, just interrupt for 1 second. If your listeners want to play a dumb video game that I made in a video game jam, which is basically like a 48-hour film festival, but they make video games instead.
Yeah.
So I made a video game in 48 hours called Maze of Cthulhu.
Ooh.
And it is, if you search for Maze of Cthulhu and my name, you'll find this game probably on my website. It is not great. I was made in 2 days by myself, but it is procedurally generated. So every time you play it, it's different.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
There you go.
And what did you use to make it? Was there a special program?
I made it with a game engine called Construct 2.
Okay.
So it's this game engine that you make it with. And it's a game engine where most of the coding is visual. There is some hand coding, like regular coding, but most of it is visual. So like,
okay, so you could just click on things and or drop down menus or something like that, or
yeah,
is that what you mean by visual?
Yeah, it is exactly right. It's still programming, but it's only like you have to do the logic of programming. You don't have to do the syntax of the code.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, that'll speed it up if in a 2-day contest of how to make a video game.
Absolutely, you can prototype things really fast and with stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool. And So have you made?
I feel like a super dork right now.
Well then, welcome. You are in the correct dork. You're in the right part of the forest, my friend. And because I want to, you know, everyone wants to make video games. Everyone, you know, you're just like, well, I have an idea, and this Construct 2 is it? Because I know that there's obviously more and more complex programs that you can use. You know, you can. Yep. Like Andy, his tabletop RPG, which is called the Hero Instant, he's got he's got a JavaScript app that goes with it that could can help you do all the things with your superpowers, because it's a superpower game, and sort of keep track of your hero traits and your drama traits and your and how many dice to roll and all this nonsense. Mm-hmm. But nonsense, come on. And but it was written in JavaScript, which is another. Java's so old, but I think it's still usable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. People still do stuff in Java.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So what are you working on? What are you working on right now? What's your dorkdom right now that you're trying to make?
I'm working on a lot of stuff. Like a funny thing, off to the right is my second screen. I have a list of projects that I'm working on, and they're all color coded.
Okay.
I can tell you exactly what I'm working on.
As to priority, is that how they're color coded?
They are color coded by priority.
What is the one at the bottom?
The one at the ones at the bottom are just actually they're pink. They're companies that I'm trying to develop things with.
Oh, okay. Oh, like so they're they're ideas to contact.
Yeah, but I mean, they're all, but everything else, like orange, the things that are in orange are all things that I am like making or producing myself, like things that I'm making.
Right.
And then things that are in blue are all things that I'm making, but I'm making with other people.
Okay.
Okay. And then the things that are in green are all things that are just like my crazy ideas that nobody will ever give me money for, but I'm doing them anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the things, are they, what types of things are they? Are there video games? Are there electronics? Is it animation? Is it a comic book? What is it that you're the,
they're all over the place.
Pick one and tell me about it.
Okay, I will tell you about it. One of my favorite things that I do is actually a show project that I'm doing. It's called NYC Talent Show. Okay, and this is actually a show, but what I do
stand-up
with this
show or a variety show or a live
it's
action
a variety,
show.
It's okay. A variety. Well, here's the crazy part about it. This is what makes it so a thing that is insane is because it's an open stage, and anybody who performs, though, I pay them money.
Okay.
So anybody can sign up and I pay them money and it's free. And I just got a $5,000 grant from New York City and I'm using the money to throw a show, pay everybody and have an open bar. And so I just give money away on this show and people do stupid things on the show. That's it.
So one of your dorkdoms and one of your skill sets is clearly writing grant proposals.
I can write grant proposals. I can write press releases. I can do all that shit.
Sure. It's the thing is first of all, it's beautiful that you will be getting a tiny amount of money for doing this Dork Forest. I like the idea of paying people for things, right?
I do too.
Right. And well, obviously, I mean, because the thing is you've created a space where you let people perform and you pay them for it. That's amazing. And to do that, you had to write a grant proposal. You have to take time out of your life to put on a show, right? I know there's some old costumes in the attic and maybe the neighbors will help you. But I mean, I'm saying this is like you're driven to do that, right?
Yeah, I'm 100% driven to just like always. It's just like if I feel like something is good, like it's a good idea and it's a fun time, then I'm like, I have to do this. Another thing I have on here is a book that I'm writing called Basic Advice. And it's basically just where I use the basic programming language. I use the basic programming language to give life advice. So like,
yes.
So it's just like basically taking good life advice and then writing little programs that delineate that advice. So like, for instance, like if it's always keep it real, then maybe it's like 10, you know, 10 assign a string to the value of being real, 20 go to 10. So that's keeping it real. Always keep it real. And then so it's like each page is advice.
Oh my God, I just fell in love with you again, Victor Vernado. It's so beautiful.
Phase of advice, and then I'm also making pixel art to of you know about whatever advice I'm giving in the facing pages.
Oh, perfect.
And so I'm trying to get this done before Christmas.
Oh, sure, because it's a perfect Christmas. It's a beautiful Christmas gift for the dork in your life who knows anything about programming BASIC.
My ad. I'm about to do an ad. Rangers of the Dork Forest. This is an ad for everyday earbuds. I really like them. Yeah. There's so much going on in the world. And so whether it's stuff you're excited about, I'm always excited about listening to that Tracy Chapman album from 1989 that I just rediscovered. Or things that you'd rather not think about, which would be, oh, I think we all know. Anyway, you can't always control the vibes, man, but you can control the vibes in your head. So put on a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your earballs and do it. I use them at the airport. I do it when I have to stand in line. I've had to stand in line. And some people use them to pump them up, to wind down, to work out. Raycons are my go-to for on-the-go audio. So the new everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. It's an improved rubber oil look and feel, so they're small. They fit right into your the gel tips fit right into your ear. Perfect ear fit. They're impressive before you even start listening. So you get three new sound profiles to make sure everything you're listening to sounds its best with just the right amount of bass. You got pure mode, balance mode, bass mode. Pure mode is podcast listening. Blues, instrumental. Balance mode is podcast listening, rock and heavy metal. Bass mode, hip-hop, EDM, and reggae. I have to say that I'm using it for just mostly guitar rock. There you go. But there's an all-new awareness mode for when you need to listen to your surroundings instead. So Raycons offer 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. I swear to God, I can travel all day long and the batteries don't go, which is awesome. There's also a built-in mic and you can take calls on your earbuds at the press of a button. And it's easy to figure out the buttons on how to skip the tracks, how to answer the phone, how to use Siri, this type of thing. So Raycon start at half the price of other premium audio brands and they sound just as good. So, and they come with a 45-day happiness guarantee. So right now, the Dork Forest listeners, Rangers, you get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/dork. So buy, B-U-Y, Raycon, RAYCON.com/dork to save 15% on Raycons. Right? Buyraycon.com/dork. You got this. And now let's get back into the show.
I took a basic class in high school on our TRS Radio Shack. TRS 90s, I think they were called. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn how to write BASIC. And you had to make a program. And I made what was computer dating. Ironic, since that's how I met my fella. but there was no, like, you would enter things in, but there was no interactive way to it. You just, like, there was a list of people that you would get hooked up with. Mm-hmm. And I think they were all men. How very binary, not even binary, not just all zeros, or all ones, I guess. Ones would be the dick joke. Zeros would be the vagina joke. So I love that it's a basic.
Yeah. So it's called basic advice, life advice as told by basic programming.
I want that. And, we will be, pushing that when it comes out, Rangers. Everybody should get that item. All right. Yeah. So a book and you have an open stage. And then what video games are you playing right now? I mean, what inspires you? And this is specifically video game related to make a new video game. Or what has done that?
What has inspired me to make a new video game? Well, actually, I think I'll just make games about anything. I'm making this game right now, which I'm really excited about, which is a game that is like the old Zork adventure games. But right now if you remember those games where you'd like type in get lamp, an open door and stuff like that. Okay. So it's a game like that, except using AI and procedural generation nowadays, like you can actually teach a computer to tell a story that's different every time. And then also with text to speech and speech to text, the game can be played with only your voice. So I'm trying to make a game right now that blind people can play.
Okay.
So that, and it's an adventure game, and it changes every time. And then it's like kind of like an adventure game that you can just speak to.
Right.
And it'll say like, you're in the hallway. You're in a hallway. There's an exit north. There's an exit south. You can hear a low rumbling to the south. What will you do? And then you'll be like, I'll go south. And like, you go south. You're in a exact, and it, right. But it'll change every time you play it too.
Okay. Oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. I always loved those text, the text games a great deal. Though the only one, there was a hybrid one called Dungeons of Doom, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And it was for the Mac Classic. I have yet to find a good simulator for it. Mm-hmm. And I just actually recycled my Mac Classic. It had 2 megs of RAM. I like to think of it as both. I did not wipe the hard drive. So the sexting that I was doing in 1999, still on there. Anyway, so through AOL chat, no less. And
That's what the technology, that's where it all started.
Yeah. So, but it has a black and white, Dungeons of Doom had a top-down black and white dungeon. And all mm-hmm. the graphics were just essentially the bricks, the flagstones. It mm-hmm. was just a grid of flagstones. And then your character was just a cursor. And then you mm-hmm. would run into tiny pixelated grayscale monsters. And then next to it was the text. And it would be like, you run into a necromancer. And then you had a drop-down menu of what you could use to fight with it, and you had health and potions, and if you didn't eat, you would die. And you would keep going up these stairs, and there were hints. You would find scrolls with hints, and the 40th level was the whole thing was hinting towards you finding an orb. The wizard will kill you. 40th level is death. So you get to the 40th level. You meet the second wizard, you get the orb, and now you have to run down 40 stairs and get out the front door. Because you can't get out the front door until you have an orb. You're trapped mm-hmm. in the dungeon. But it wasn't the good text like you're talking about where you're like, I go to the right or I do this. The one that I played that was like that was a Lord of the Rings one.
Uh-huh.
And the old Willow Man killed me by the Brandywine every time. I never got away from the Mirkwood. I never got out of the old forest.
I loved text adventures. I remember there was one for the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh!
And it was impossible. Because unless you knew every detail of the book, you could not survive.
Right! Right! And I reread passages of Fellowship of the Ring over and over again, trying to figure out, am I supposed to go to the left? Am I supposed to go to the right? I tried shouting for Tom Bombadil, but the Tom Bombadil help doesn't, I mean, you can't shout for help for Tom Bombadil until you get to the barrows and the barrow whites. So he just happens to find you on the river, and he never does in that game, unless you do something that I never did. So I had to stop playing it because I would just die. It was so sad.
Yeah, they just made those games for the really, really, really hardcore fans.
Yeah, it was definitely you were like, I'm going to play Dune, but I'm going to have to know, shout out Mapes' middle name or some fucking thing.
Or the secret language of the Fremen.
Yes.
How's that?
Yes. How about that? That's a nice reference.
That's a good reference.
Well played. Well played.
Did they have a secret language? I actually don't know.
They did. They did. But it was, but I'm rereading it right now because there's a new movie coming out. And I thought I would disappoint myself by being refreshed what the book was.
I remember the old movie. Oh my God. Used to call him Paul Moadib Kwisatz Haderach. I was like, this is awesome.
Yes, it is awesome. And it remains awesome. But it is Paul Moadib. Yeah, we're listening to it on Audible just because It's just, you know, it's, I've read it a couple of times, I think, but I think listening to it, you get every line, and then you know what the hell you're, then you really, you know, when I read a book, I tend to skim it, and I do a lot of rereading, which is fun for me, you know, because I know how the book's going to end, but now I'm like, oh, look what else happened. So you're working on that video game. That's an amazing video game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool, but that's also a thing where I'm like, I'm working on it now because I know it's a good idea because I haven't seen it before. A lot of these things, like, I'm like, if I come up with an idea, I think it's good, then I'll search the internet and see what's there. And then people have tried to make procedurally generated text adventure games, but most of them are crap. And then as far as like doing the interface with the speaking, like, people have not married it correctly yet. And so I'm just like, it if I make it, I think it'll be a good thing. And so
there's a task there, and you can, and once you make something, like, how have you made other video games? What other video games have you made?
You mean that have been wide released?
No, not wide released. Just like, cause you made the one with the Construct 2 for that 2-day project.
I made the one with the Construct 2. I also made a game for fun, where I just wanted to practice animation. So I made a game, an Endless Runner, where you're a zombie. It's called Dead Run, and you're a zombie, and you're just chasing people and eating them.
Okay. That's super fun.
It's really stupid. I'll send you the link for it. You can play it. It's really hard to play.
Oh, I bet. There was Ali Barter is a game designer who's been on the program before, and he made some PS3 game that I played, and it was a zombie, and all it is you murder zombies, but it is never ending. Like, they just keep respawning, and you're like, my thumb hurts, and it's
what do you know what the game is? Was it like what's the name of that game? Left 4 Dead.
No.
Is that?
I don't think it was called that. I will check with him. And we have it because I bought it. He was just on the program talking about action figures. A couple of months ago. And but it was super interesting. I mean, the thing is, with my favorite video games, I don't mind if it's an endless, like, if you could keep playing. I like that you can keep playing, even though, of course, productivity down. Uh-huh. But the problem is if you stop playing, you die, is not one of my favorites.
What do you want to happen when you stop playing?
I want to be able to pause it.
You can still do that, right? You can pause it in most games.
In most games. But I also like it when it gets to a level end. Right, I like some sense of accomplishment.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you like, for instance, like you probably love like Red Dead Redemption.
I have not played that. We have always had the consoles. I have always been afraid to start them. I now have a Nintendo Switch, and I literally have to forget that I own it so that I can get something done because I'm already 3 hours a day playing Marvel Puzzle Quest, which is a versus match 3 superhero game with and Marvel Puzzle Quest goes so deep into the long boxes. Mm-hmm. Like they just introduced so many characters. They have every version and when you get a new version of a character, they show you the cover art from the comic book.
That's cool.
It's really
cool. What character are you talking about? You said they went deep into the long boxes. Give me a name.
Oh, God. There's they've got Lizard. They've got...
He's not deep. I mean, he's not the top tier Spider-Man villain. But.
No, he's another C-level Spider-Man villain. But, like, the roster is... if I go to the... I guess... So, I mean, there's normal ones, right? Like Beta Ray Bill and Carnage and Okoye. And but then there's the Ghost Rider Deadpool, which is very popular right now.
Wait, do they have Alpha Flight?
They have members of Alpha Flight, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. So that's
name an Alpha Flight?
Puck.
Oh, you know what? I have not seen Puck yet.
North Star.
They have North Star.
Okay, he got big recently because he came out as gay, and everybody was like, "What?
Not North Star." And so
I think all the superheroes are gay. I mean, why are they wearing those tight outfits?
Well, and America Chavez, she's gay. And, oh, yeah. And then there's like three different versions of all these people, right? And, there's so many. There's not enough versions of some, and then there's too many versions of others. Like, there's six versions of Captain America. Nobody cares. I care, but not enough, right? So, the Spirit of Vengeance, which is the Deadpool, Knight Rider, not Red Knight Rider, the Ghost Rider, yeah. Deadpool, is very funny. There's also a Punisher Ghost Rider, because he was he was also the Herald of Galactus right now. Mm-hmm. And, there's three different versions of Elektra. That seems overkill. And then, there's Havoc. Havoc is something, right? That guy's, yeah. he's not common. Like, sometimes people will come up and I'll have to look them up. So, but I'm already playing that 3 hours a day. I can't possibly. Sometimes I have a hard time introducing another game into my life. Because right now I'm playing Animal Crossing and this, and that is somewhere between 3 or 4 hours a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
It feels like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It seems like a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I do the same thing with drawing, though. I draw a lot.
Okay, so you spend most. I see you have a nice thing behind you.
A drawing desk.
Yeah.
Back over here. Yeah, yeah, totally.
It's real nice. That looks like it's a nice height. Looks like it's a nice piece of wood.
It's a great piece of wood.
It's what are you drawing? So you just sit down and doodle, or and then
I
and
doodle. I do a lot of cartooning.
Okay.
Yeah, I do a lot of cartooning. I mean, this is another thing where I was just like, I want to be a cartoonist, and then I kept drawing until I could be until I was a New Yorker cartoonist.
So you could submit to the New Yorker. I mean, here's like the real one of the real skills that I see in some of this stuff is that you have things in pink of how to get in touch with these people, right? So that you can yeah. submit. Like, you do the research to figure out, well, how do I submit a cartoon to the New Yorker? How do I submit a comic book idea to Marvel? Right?
Yeah. I eventually started figuring it out. It's because at one point I did have like kind of like a midlife crisis, sort of like what am I doing sort of thing that happened like maybe 3.5 to 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was working as a producer on the Love and Hip Hop franchise.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, the atmosphere there was a little morally corrupt.
I don't even know what that is. It sounds like a reality show.
Yeah, and, it is. It's a reality show.
And is
a
it
series,
a
bunch of them. It's a whole world of Love and Hip Hop reality shows. There's like six of them.
There's six of them. And it's, yeah. Is it a way to get hip hop artists laid? What's happening?
Hip hop artists do get laid. Some artists started out on that show and then became huge. You may have heard of Cardi B.
I have heard of Cardi B. Was she the hip hop artist who was searching for love in one of the episodes?
She was a stripper on just a character's. She was a stripper on the show. And
okay.
Was dating hip hop artists, and then she went into hip hop.
Okay,
and then
because
became Cardi B
and changed her name to Cardi B,
she wasn't a singer when it started, or singer rapper when it started.
Right,
she was a stripper on the show, and it was I think she was like the girlfriend of someone, mm-hmm. but then she got so popular as a character on the show, started a record career, then she blew up.
Right. And what do you know about Cardi B? Because the thing is I think I like one of her songs, but I can't remember I can't remember anything. My mind is a sieve. But
I don't know a lot about Cardi B. I knew more about her when I was working on the shows, obviously.
Right.
But now I don't.
You knew that she was super bendy and she and her job was to take off her clothes for money. These are the things you probably knew offhand. And that's what
that's what I knew back when I started. Yeah.
Yes. and it's so you had this existential kind of, you know, midlife crisis and you're
right.
Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Is that what happened?
Yeah, because I mean, I have anxiety a lot. I got a lot of anxiety. And and so, like most people in entertainment, for a long time, I was just like always afraid of doing the wrong thing and just being excommunicated from the entertainment world.
Yes.
And then one time, yeah, because your brain says that.
Right.
And so one time I was working on this show, and then I lied to get out of work one day, because who doesn't?
Right. You were just like, I need a personal day. But you can't in showbiz say, I need a personal day. You have to lie. It is set up so that you have to go, I am so sick. I have to go to Vegas and get married. I have to go to Vegas and get divorced. Like the lies get huge sometimes. And you're like, what are you doing?
And it was producing. Yeah. And it was producing this TV show. And then so I lied to get off of work. And then the co-executive producer caught me in the lie. Like he knew for a fact that I had lied.
Yeah.
And he confronted me about it. And then when he confronted me, I didn't know that he knew for a fact. So I backed up my lie.
Oh, you doubled down.
To get out of work. Oh, yeah. Because I didn't know that he knew for sure.
Right.
But then he goes, he called because I told him I was going to do something at somewhere else. And he knew people there and he called them.
Well, first of all, that's super bitchy.
Yes, I agree.
And because that is not okay, because he knows that everyone needs a fucking day off. Anyway, go ahead.
But so we were arguing.
Lied. Yes.
I lied. We were arguing at work about whatever. And then he said that, and it was like, it was my greatest fear. Okay. My greatest fear. I say this all the time. You want to scare anybody to death, just walk up to any random person and just go, I know everything. That's it. That's all you need to do.
So, here's the good news. You can do that to me or Maria Bamford, and we'll both go, yeah. Yeah, I've told you everything. There's nothing to hide. And
it felt like a grenade was going off in slow motion at my feet. I was like, oh,
I'm so sorry.
But then nothing happened. He didn't care. I didn't get fired. They still needed me because I was the best producer. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, what have I been scared of all this time?
Revelation.
And so that was when I stopped working for other people and started doing my own shit 4 years ago.
Nice. And
that's led me to where I am right now. So that changed everything for me, being on that show and then having my worst fear happen and then it not being that bad. I was like, oh, this isn't bad at all.
So did you eventually leave that job?
Yeah, it was really funny because that changed the way I was at the show, because like I remember one point it was also a show where like, and it's a multi-million dollar show.
Right.
And so, and being a producer on that was kind of a big deal. And so one point the co-executive producer would like send emails where he'd swear at people like, you motherfuckers, I need this done, blah, blah, blah. And I would send him an email back and I was like, because this is after my revelation. I was like, hey, man, don't swear at me. I don't, you know, that's not part of my job.
Yeah.
And then he was like, he had a meeting with me the next day and he goes, you don't like me to swear? Too fucking bad. Do you want to work on this show next season? I was like, no.
Yeah. Oh,
I was
perfect.
Like, no, I don't.
It turns out.
And then he goes, you got a problem, go to HR. And I was like, there's HR? And then I went to HR because I actually didn't know that there was.
Right. There is in productions. There isn't in stand-up. So why would you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went to HR. And then they fucking came down on him so hard that he was the most polite, nicest guy for the rest of the time I worked there. And then after that, I just never went back.
Right. So the next season, you were like, you're right. I did not want to work here. Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I didn't want to be there. I was just like, no, this sucks.
Right. This is, yeah. And that, I think, reality, everyone I know who works in some sort of reality, and it's also not real, but it's also hyper real, right? Like it's this weird amalgamation between, you know, there's real emotions in it because somebody is like flicking you, trying to get you to react, you know, 14 hours a day. And then, but then, so it is not morally the greatest, choice.
Yeah, the saddest part about a lot of reality TV and is that producers like myself would be given the task of taking people who may not be, you know, have a full drawer of, you know, and so
they're not nuts. They're just not all there.
Yeah, and you manipulate them into doing things that are entertaining.
Right.
And that sucks.
It really does suck. And it literally, it beats you up. It beats you up emotionally. And it makes, doesn't make you feel like the, and I've only done Last Comic Standing. And I witnessed them manipulate the other comics. The first season, they manipulated me. Mm-hmm. And then you would have thought I would not have gone back. Two more seasons, I go back. And but, you know, I knew better than to let them play me. And so every season, it became less and less likely that I was going to be picked. Because I was just doing stand-up because I needed the stage time. And the I always need the stage time. But I needed, like, the credit, right? I needed the TV credit. So, yeah.
I remember the time I was on, I was trying to do Last Comic Standing once, but then I was like, I remember I said something that got me booted. I think it was, oh, I remember what I said. Natasha Leggero was a host.
Okay.
At the time, or a judge. And then I did a set and like my audition set just did not go well. You know, sometimes it just don't go well.
Sometimes it doesn't.
But, yep. And then I was incensed because I was incensed because it was at a time where like Natasha Leggero like had gotten the gig and whatever, but at that time, generally if we were both on a show, I would do way better than Natasha Leggero would.
Right. So she was a peer. It was,
yeah, and
it
she was the
of,
judge, though.
Yeah, and she was, but she was the judge, yeah. And so that'll also fuck with your head, yeah.
Oh, it absolutely did. And so when they interviewed me,
yeah,
I said some pretty hilarious things. I thought that just got me excommunicated from the show for that season.
I have to say that my favorite story about Last Comic Standing was there's a comic named Bent Washburn, and he is an incredibly good stand-up comic. He is, but he was raised in Salt Lake City and he's, I guess a Jack Mormon or whatever. He's a non-practicing Mormon. And, it was Aunt Kathleen Madigan and Alonzo Bowden and they are of an age, you know, it's sort of like when I performed for them, I was like, I know you guys. All right. And that's fine. But so Bent did his set and they were like, you're very funny, but you know, you're Mormon. So you probably don't have any dark comedy. And he was like, well, you would be incorrect because you know, nobody's darker. Right. And they were like, we'll do a dark joke. And so he did a super dark joke and they were like, too dark. And that's not fair. And but I don't think
that's
it was
not fair at all.
It wasn't the judges who did that. It was the producers, right?
Yeah.
And because the producers are like, well, you know, it a riff, and so he did. It's an amazing joke. I think it's on one of his albums, Bent Washburn. It is about how he married his wife, and his wife is Catholic, and they were talking about their kids and what religion to raise them in, and it got heated, and eventually he said, well, at least our pedophiles marry our victims. And that is a great joke. That is a quality joke right there. And
that's good. It's very good.
And they're like, too dark. We were hoping you had a Hitler joke. He's like, Hitler?
When I was on the show, they wanted me to do more jokes about being an albino, and I didn't want to do that.
Right. You are African American. You are an albino.
That is 100% true.
It has been addressed. It was addressed in 1994. It was, and I mean, the thing is I can also do throwaway lines about that everyone thinks I'm gay and that I'm overweight. Those are my two throwaway lines that I'm just like, but if you wanted me to do a 5-minute set on that, I would have to tell you to fuck right off because I have written other jokes.
Exactly. Because I mean, that's also part of When I started to get popular really fast and I got work really fast because I was such a unique type and I was funny.
Yeah.
So that's how I like immediately got into like an Eddie Murphy movie, immediately got into an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. But I was also like, he's a creepy looking weird dude. Like that was like my place.
Right.
And I didn't want that to be my place forever. And so that's why I just kind of like changed how I did shit.
Yeah, which I think I admire that a lot, because the thing is to be typecast as the spooky looking dude, you're just like, not it. I don't want to go to Comic Cons for the rest of my life. And they're like, hey, do the voice.
I mean, I would love to go to Comic Con for the rest of my life for something that I created, being the guy who made something awesome.
Yes.
I would love that.
Yes.
And that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, I love, exactly. You're working on the rest of it. It's
although I went to Comic Con once dressed in costume. I did not like it at all.
Oh, really? Which costume?
Because
cosplay or what are your characters?
I was dressed as Rick from Rick and Morty.
Okay.
Me and my girlfriend at the time, I was Rick, she was Morty.
Okay.
But the problem is that if you generally have weird anxiety around people and you go to Comic Con in costume, everybody comes up to you and wants to take pictures with you, and you're like, oh my God.
I was hoping to blend in. I was hoping to, yeah, just wear a Rick and Morty t-shirt next time.
Yeah.
By the way, I am talking with Victor Varnado. He has a podcast called Six Unseemly Questions. It is at Six Unseemly on the Twitter and such, and it's a fun podcast. I did it, and I don't know.
You're great.
That was it's super fun. You also said that you paint.
Yes.
And what medium do you do? Acrylics, watercolors, oils?
I prefer watercolors. I prefer watercolors because I like to paint in watercolors, and then I love to go over it with black ink afterwards. So it's very graphic feel. I mean, I think it just comes from when I started the work. I started originally was mostly because of comic books, and so it kind of like
that sort of Sandman, Lock and Key. Who's the guy who does the art for Lock and Key? Because he had the art, and so a lot of Sandman was painted. It looked like watercolors with ink over it. Yeah.
Right. And then that also, it kind of dovetails with just like my cartooning work. So, yeah.
Who are your favorite comic book artists? Do you know?
I really like Ryan Ottley.
Okay.
Because he did like 99% of the run of the Invincible comic.
Okay.
Yeah, he did almost all of that.
It turns out he knows how to draw people blowing up. Good for him.
He's great.
Really good at splurting red. And
I would say Invincible, I think Invincible is the only comic that I've read every single issue of. Just like everything.
I think I stopped reading it about 4 or 5 years ago. I read the first couple hundred, I think. Yeah. But there's, you know, it's always...
there's a lot.
there's so many, and there's so many, like, I like that I'm willing to give stuff a chance, right? Like, I read the first 3 graphic novels of 100 Bullets. I read the first 6 Dresden Files before I realized, it's all right. I read 6 or 7 Terry Pratchett's before I got into the Discworld kind of sitch. And I've still only read maybe 14 or 15 of those, but,
oh my God, you would love this. I directed this game. I made a game show, for Penguin Random House and, Facebook Watch. And the whole game show is famous science fiction writers.
Okay.
Paired with comedians. And it's a comedy debate game show where they debate about topics like, is it better to be part of the Empire or part of the Rebellion? Like, what's the best vacation spot? Is it Middle Earth or Discworld? Like,
nice.
That's the whole show.
That is great. There is something not that specific, and that sounds wonderful. I love.
But Jim Butcher was on it.
Oh,
Jim
was he? Okay,
yeah.
That's the Dresden File dude,
exactly.
And who is a very good writer. But it took me 4 books for him, I think, for him to sort of discover. I read, what did I read? Oh, Daniel Dad Lewis. Daniel Day Lewis's dad wrote a series of mysteries that I have read. And he, the first one, it's just like, it was real private eye kind of stuff. And the first book that he wrote, and he wrote it under a different name. His name is Cecil B. Lewis. But I just call him Daniel Day-Lewis's dad, which made Mike Kaplan call him Daniel Dad Lewis, which is where I go with that. But he wrote this book, and I know he wrote it for money, Cecil B. Lewis or whatever his name is. And he hated the idea of an investigator, a private eye, but he needed the money. But by about 60 or 70 pages into his own fucking book, he fell in love with his own character. And then he wrote like 7 more of them.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting? Like if you write something that you're like, I don't wanna, this isn't, I don't admire this kind of work. And then you write it and then you fall in love with your own character. And then all of a sudden you're the guy who writes that. Because he was also a poet. Mm-hmm. He was the poet laureate for Great Britain in the 60s or 70s or something.
That's interesting. Yeah. That sounds like his book is probably a good read.
Yeah. They're pretty fun. The first one is not the best of them, but the first one of almost anything isn't the, I mean, movies for some reason tend to be really good and then fade off, but books for some reason in series.
Pierce Anthony, his first book that I read was A Spell for Chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good. And it just get worse and worse and worse and worse.
And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them.
There are so many Xanth novels.
I tried to read the Xanth novels. It didn't take.
First one was fun, though.
Okay. I will say that Anne McCaffrey, the first 3 Dragon Riders of Pern books are great. The next 3 are pretty good. The last 3 are interesting and great again. And there's 2 novellas that are pretty good. And then there's probably 11 more books that are like, nope. Your publisher is clearly going, this is a cash cow that we have to hook up to this thing. And so that's crazy. So what do you want? You have about 5 minutes left, my friend. We have been talking. All right. I've been talking a lot just because I haven't talked to you in 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Hey, Rangers. I got to talk to Victor Varnado today. I hope you enjoyed it.
We still have seriously nerded out about a lot of stuff.
We truly have. And I think my favorite was the basic advice. But I do like Maze of Cthulhu. And and I like the revelation about the fear of excommunication, because that is a big thing in the entertainment industry. I wonder if it's a big thing in every industry, like if plumbers worry.
I think people are afraid. I mean, because my anxiety is still here. Okay, so but I act against it all the time. But when I started acting against it, it became really apparent when people were slaves to their own anxiety. And so I think it's everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think recognizing it in the moment is a huge skill, right? Like, and it's something you have to practice. Like, yeah, the thing is once you realize you're afraid, facing that fear of whatever it is it's hard. But once you practice it, it becomes muscle memory eventually, right? And and they say that if you could face your fear and kind of remove those fears, nature abhors a vacuum, right? And what comes in its place is bravery, is courage. So once you can recognize that fear, you can face if you have resentments, right? Like if you are just like you're reliving some sort of injustice over and over again, because when people are mean to me, I'm like, and I respond, that's fine, right? But if I relive it hours later and they're taking up valuable real estate in my brain box, well, I'm like, I can't believe that guy said that to me. I can't believe that still happens. You know, like I had a bad week on the road 2 weeks ago and I've let go of most of it, but clearly there's some of it still in there. And if I could let it go completely, it wouldn't take up any of my brain space and I could create something new in it, right? And I could be of some use to somebody instead of just re-feeling negative feelings, right? Which is all a resentment is, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, not to get too touchy-feely,
but
I will say that... when I've spent a lot of time studying like a lot of different kinds of philosophy and I stand behind, I would say 90% of Stoicism.
Okay.
And
defined as how? Because the definition in my brain may or may not be accurate.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I stand behind is that in Stoicism, it's just like, don't put any energy into anything you can't change. Yeah. And so, like, you can't change the past, so no need to fret about the past. Mm-hmm. You can't change, you know, like, anything that you have no control over. If yeah, like, and you recognize that, like, just give it very little or no energy at all.
Right, right.
That's the biggest thing that I love about Stoicism. It's okay. Just like, anything that's out of your control, hey, man, don't give it a lot of energy.
Right, right, because it's not going to change anyway, so you might as well work on something that you can change. That's interesting. Somebody quoted the Four Agreements to me, and somebody had given me that Hippie Skippy book back in the 90s or the early 2000s, mm-hmm. and it's great. And one of the agreements is not to take something personally. And you're like, well, that's almost impossible. But like, if someone makes a decision, especially in my work or in how they're treating me, I tend to take it personally. But I feel like if I follow through with that, because one of the agreements is don't take it personally. If I follow it through, I can take it personally in that moment. But if I can let it go afterwards and just go, oh, he treats all women like that, or he treats all other humans like that, just don't hang out with that person.
I don't take things personally, and the way that I can get around taking things personally is because I always think about whether or not people know me. Because people who I love, like I definitely take them personally. Like if someone that I care about, like if my wife Leslie ran in here and was like, you're fucking loser, like I would take it personally.
Right.
But everybody else, like people who don't really know me, like I'm just like, they can say anything and mm-hmm. really, it doesn't bug me anymore. It's the same as a crazy homeless person yelling at me from across the street. It doesn't matter.
Right. Well, because it's not really about you is I think what the message there is. Because the message is you're not supposed to take it personally because they're not even thinking about you. They're just yelling into the void. And mm-hmm. you're just like, well, if I don't internalize it, then I can keep going and not think I'm a piece of shit or whatever. And yeah, that's an excellent point. I like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you have stuff that's published besides the video games and the comic book, the Marvel comic book people should go see? What is it?
You can grab Shame Itself. That is a comic, but that's older.
Yeah.
If you want to grab something recent,
sure.
You can go to Albino Why the Cage Bird Sings.com and pick up a free EP that I made. Well, it's a pay what you want EP, but it's a comedy EP, Albino Why the Cage Bird Sings.com. And
that's so long.
I know, but it's funny. I couldn't not do it.
I own FamilyPetAncestry.com. So oh, nice. Albino, Why the Caged Bird Sings, caged, ED.
Yeah,
it'll
Albino,
be in the
Why
notes,
the Caged Bird Sings.com. Yes. Well, I mean, my album is called Stages of Being Black, so you can just search for Stages of Being Black. But
as
if you
well.
Want to.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
But if you go to Albino, Why the Caged Bird Sings.com, it'll link it straight there. and also on October 19th, Christian Finnegan's show and tell stand-up special is coming out. I directed it and produced it.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
That is exciting.
All right, everybody.
We should talk about selling mine, which is in the can.
Really?
Yeah. Do you think anybody would want to buy a 4K? It's all very beautiful. Or license
actually,
it or
I mean,
something. Well,
I
so we
actually
could talk.
Can introduce you to people who might.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm hanging up. What? No, I'm reaching through the Zoom.
I mean, I just sold a special to this one company, and they're interested in a second one with a different one. So, I mean, they're buying them now.
They're buying them. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, love is in the air, you guys. Victor Varnado is a delight, and you should follow all the things. Is there a victorvarnado.com, or do people have to go to Albino Why the Caged Bird Sings?
There is a victorvarnado.net.
Oh, .net.
Oh. Yeah, .net, everybody.
And he made it sexy. It's at six. Oops. Yep. At six.
At six unseemly. If you just go to victorvarnado.net, you'll find
everything. Is like
or just
Everything's
exactly.
linked there. It'll all work.
Victor Varnado on Instagram. Find me on Instagram. You'll find everything. There's a link there. VictorVarnado.net. Everything's there. You can. It's a list. It's a link tree.
It's a link tree. Remember link trees?
It's a link tree.
I've yet to use them. Anyway, thank you so much for doing the show, Victor.
Thank you for having me on your show. I loved it.
Yay. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?